Welcome to a very special Just Say No to Drugs Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White, with a special appearance by First Lady Nancy Reagan. I'm kidding. Vicki Bennett's here, though. Oh, I'm glad you are, too. Welcome, everyone. I have a very special guest joining me today. I didn't even say who I was, did I? I may have in the introduction. This is your friend, Hardy White. How do you know I'm your friend? Well, I just told you, and that is for you to reject. I'm like junk mail. I'm coming at you. I may have valuable coupons, but that's up to you. You can just toss me in the bin or recycle me or something like that. I don't mind being recycled. That would be lovely. People do that. Today it's called sampling. And speaking of which, taking art and recycling it and repurposing it, I have my friend Vicki Bennett, a.k.a. People Like Us. If you wanted to pronounce that, you'd say Acapulco, like Acapulco, a.k.a. P-L-U. And that is a Vicki. Hello, Vicki. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Speaking to me from London, England.
Yes.
Now, I just visited you in person.
You did. You brought me COVID.
I brought you COVID. Most people just bring bourbon chocolates, which I think I also brought. I think you brought me COVID. That felt like British COVID. Because yeah, I had mushy peas up all in my sinuses. And that feels like something more of a traditional COVID breakfast.
Yeah, I mean, there's no telling
who we'll never know. Let's just say
we shared.
Yeah, I think it was a nice ending to a wonderful weekend, because not everything can be great all the time. And I was
exactly. We got to have a COVID residency afterwards, where everyone checked in with each other to find out how.
Yeah,
terrible
and it
felt.
Just it slowed you down. It's just like, why don't you just sit in the couch and think about this for a minute? That's the way I thought about
yeah.
it. Because I also got to read, because
yes,
I bought books when I was there. So I came home and was able to read.
Yes, that's wonderful. And it's a great way to get over jet lag, is having COVID as well, actually.
Yeah, because you can blame that. You don't know which is which is wonderful. You can just sleep. I'm just going to sleep. People go, it's okay. With jet lag, you go, I'm just going to sleep. And it makes you seem weak. You go, well, you know, Kissinger didn't sleep.
Yeah, or people lie and go, I don't get jet lag. It's like,
no. You all get jet lag because of the, we're all human. Oh, my goodness, isn't this informative? See, I'll tell you what, Vicki, I don't mean to be a snob about radio, but a lot of people have these podcasts now where they sit around with their friends and they just talk about nonsense. And they have nothing to say, and they just chit-chat like that. Say, oh, I just visited you in your town. But here on radio, this is much different. And it is really the difference, I think, between fine art and folk art. Hear me out. I was just visiting your fine city of London, England, and I went to the Tate Modern, which is, by the way, a brutalist abomination. It feels like a loading bay of the Death Star or something. This is because we entered through this big ramp, you know, and there's nothing. It just feels like a lot of concrete. The worst is that National Theater. That's a scary building.
Well, they're different because the National Theater was built to be the National Theater, whereas the Tate Modern was previously some kind of
Right, you can tell, right? Because why would it need a smokestack or whatever it has? So what are they making in there? I thought they were incinerating old paintings. Like, if I was going to have a modern museum, I would have a furnace that was entirely 18th century portraiture. Just those awful portraits that most museums, you know, are just lousy with them. Those people with wigs on, and they're never great portraits, and they're fancy dress. Those could be used for fuel. So in the Tate
That's
Modern,
true.
I'm looking around there, minding my own business, and there is Duchamp's ready-made called Fountain. And as we all know, it's a urinal, not the modern, wonderful modern style urinals that flush when you walk away, but one of the old school ones, and it's laying on his side, and he made it into an art by signing it and dating it. And there it was. And it is one of the most important pieces, and by important, I mean it can get into restaurants that you and I can't, in the history of modern art, and especially in the 20th century. And I was just thinking, my goodness, there it is, saying just right out in the open, I am taking, I can't say the word on radio, I guess, but a urine, I'm micturating on art.
The
I'm wee-weeing, I'm taking a wee-wee, and I'm wee-weeing on you. And then the extra wee-wee thing is, that is one of those 60s reproductions that they knocked off. And So there you go. So it was stale. The idea was even old by then. Could you imagine? Yeah, I did this thing 40 years ago that was clever. And that's the feeling it gives you. Exactly. I walked away.
So I was just waiting to sneeze.
Experience gave me COVID. There's a button. That's the hilarious thing. There's not a button, though. We're at our home studios.
Yeah, I think I'm getting a cold.
You might be.
Well, there was some conjecture as to whether he made that art, whether even he didn't make the art that wasn't there. That apparently some mm-hmm. woman.
She has
it.
A hyphenate. Listen, she has a hyphenated name. I'm laughing at my own joke.
She posh
oh
then.
My goodness! But she does have a hyphenated name.
Does she?
I wish I could remember. Gosh, it was just on the tip of my tongue. But all those surrealists, you know, and all. I remember I used to, because I had the, when I was growing up, I had the trading cards, you know, that's how you remember everybody. You go, oh, I'd trade your Hans Arp for Tristan Zara or something. The,
Was that a real thing?
No, I don't know. No, but you know what is?
Okay.
There was a Hasidic rabbi trading cards I saw one time. I swear on the life of somebody I value. Isn't that crazy? I don't know why you'd want to. I don't know that those are really. Those were probably made to placate Orthodox, like Hasidic children. It was like, I'd like some cards. And they go, you can't have regular cards, but here's some rabbis. Something like that. That isn't the way they speak.
I had the Bay City Rollers.
I have
cards.
Operation Desert Storm playing cards. Those are playing cards. So yeah, they came out during Desert Storm, and they were given to the troops as a way of identifying members of the Saddam Hussein regime. So different cards. I'm not kidding you. Different cards would have different, like, this is the minister of television or something. Yes.
Really?
And so that they could capture the people. So they gave them in the form of playing cards to the soldiers.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? And then the Ace of Spades is Saddam Hussein.
Well, I mean, the Bay City Rollers ones came with a pink strip of bubble gum, you know, like that kind of.
Did
that
you save
classic
that?
Bubble. Well, the thing about bubble gum is it's pointless, isn't it? I mean, you just chew it, and then the flavor goes away, and so you have to put some more in, and eventually your whole mouth's full of
but
pink
food is that way too.
Goo.
You just chew it, swallow it, and you make it poop, and you have to go get
you
more.
You don't swallow it. If you swallow, do you swallow
no,
it?
No, I was saying food is the same way.
Oh, I mean, food, okay. Because there was that myth, because there wasn't the internet, you couldn't look it up, but there was that thing that, someone swallowed some bubble gum and it got tangled up on their in their insides.
Well, I guess if your insides were like made of like hair.
Well, if you're all bones, I was imagining it was going to make like this spider's web.
Because it does, it gets
on
hair, it does, it goes to crazy things.
Yeah. Yeah, you
it
tell my cat
it doesn't
want
to come out once it's in there.
No. No, and then it just hangs around.
I wonder why that nature hasn't really used that as a delivery system for something like, what's this in my hair? Ooh, it's the eggs of something in the forest. But now it's on me. I can't get it out. You're going to have to shave your head. Well, I guess lice are like that. You have to do that. You have to get them.
Lice
are like that. You have to get them. You have to shave to get those.
Have you had head
lice? Have I had head lice? No. Yeah. Just body lice. No, I'm kidding.
No,
I'm
I've
kidding.
Had head lice.
You know, they separated. So did you know that head lice and like and pubic lice are different species? Because because they lost, because people lost body hair. And so they got like stranded. That's what I heard. I don't think that could be right.
What, over several decades? You'd think there's no to jump, wouldn't
know.
You?
I don't know a lot about
are
lice.
They like the toad in the toad
I really
in the
was
pan.
Wanting to talk about art. You know, I don't know how. I think that there is a fine line. You start talking about art, and then, like, pubic lice and things like that, and urinating, like Duchamp, and that's all urinating like Duchamp. That's
See,
my new
you
book.
You did start with the urinal. You started
is
with the urinal.
Is that how you say it? I love how tomato-tomato our whole exchanges are.
Yeah, if you're going to start with the urinal, you're on the road to the headline.
Say urinal fast. Garage.
Urinal. No, it's garage.
Say Babel urinal garage. Garage. Now I'm doing it.
Babel urinal garage.
Yeah, that's how I can't even believe we understand one another. It's amazing. It's happened. I think that British English and American English are like head lice and pubic lice. And I don't know who's who. We take turns being the pubic lice. But we both, God, what beautiful language we share. This trip did inspire me, and artistically, I hoped I'd see more other kind. I didn't go to many museums because, for me, you know, the City of London is a museum.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even human remains in the street and everything. There weren't that the day I was there, but...
There are, but they're powder.
And they're under things.
We're made of human
they're
remains,
under things.
Aren't we?
I want to drain that Thames. I look at the Thames.
Oh, they do.
Just drain it dry like the Seven Chinese Brothers book or something. And then, and then just walk in there. It must be the treasures that must be in there.
They do drain the Thames. They call it something like the Big Drain or something like that. And they do it at, near where we live in Twickenham. And they cut off Richmond to Isleworth, and then they drain it and find shopping trolleys.
I drain it completely like the ships are suddenly sitting on a muddy bottom at a jaunty angle.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah.
They sometimes find like dead people, but... more often they find shopping trolleys.
Shopping trolleys and the original Waterloo Bridge. That's amazing.
The original London
Bridge.
Is that
in there too? That fell down.
Yeah, yeah.
I like this.
I mean, I would go and see it. They do it once a year around August. But I worry that there might be a dead person in there on the day that they're doing
I'm sure there's multiple ones. I was walking over... trying to think what bridge it is. Does it matter? Can I just make up a bridge? Blackfriars.
Yeah, just make one up. I'll correct you. No, you weren't.
I may have been. No. I walked over multiple bridges. Well, we could say it was Waterloo, but it absolutely was not. But it was one of those.
Okay. Was it a pedestrian bridge?
Yeah, it was a pedestrian bridge.
Was it a little one?
No, I can't remember. But
did it have a train
attached? Oh, yeah, it might have. What's that?
Carry on.
So it might have been that one. But I'm walking along, and this guy, this is like kind of strutting punk guy, right out of some weird movie, right? He walks up to one of those life preservers, those round rings, you know, that's meant if somebody falls off the bridge, you toss him in after it, right? He just walks by, picks it up, he throws it into the water for no reason, kind of like makes a smirk and keeps going.
Whoa.
And I was like, man, that's great. I've seen people do that just out of nowhere vandalism in many cities.
Yeah.
And I'm always stunned.
Well, you only can do that so many times, and then basically you'll be the one in the water with a bit and hit on the head by a rubber ring.
Right, because it will.
It's an old parable, you know.
Somebody's going to throw you in like that. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
Or one of the bobbies will come up and say, what is all this then? and then they'll be arrested. They'll be nicked. Am I getting it right? Then, yeah, so that...
Nicked. Yeah, they'll be stolen. Yeah.
No, now, what do you say when someone's arrested? We over here, we say plobbed or gabloided. You go around and say that to your friends.
We don't say that. No, we say... Well, no, apparently... Oh, dear, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to adjust this recorder. No, Pat, what it's your nicked if people were like on the telly in a detective
what?
Thing.
What would we say when they're?
No, what we say
you
is
do
you're,
say you're nicked.
Yeah, well they. Do
yeah,
on the
but
telly.
Not in real life. They wouldn't say that. They would say arrested.
No, no, definitely not. Yes, exactly.
That's interesting to me. All the art differences. To what we think, I'm transitioning back to the well, I would because I do want to. I want to also. It's getting near Christmas, and you know, something I know that happens every Christmas in England in London is that we don't really have here so much is interest in the Doctor Who special. We have no interest in that.
Yes.
But you do because it's like you keep wondering, like, how is it that the world is always, every few Christmases, the world's, you know, at threat, and then we need a Time Lord. But now there's a brand new Time Lord, right?
Yeah. Yeah, arriving on, well, he's already arrived, and he had to split in half from
David
Tennant.
I saw that. They split in two.
That was amazing. Yeah. That was amazing.
Yeah, that was weird. I didn't like when they sang Ebony and Ivory. I thought that was dumb. But everything else was good about
it. It's a
shame
they. Yeah, they got rid of that bit. But yeah, I mean, I also find it very weird because then it became like Twin Peaks because basically suddenly there were two doctors, two TARDISes. I guess two TARDISes is a TARDIS.
There were two. Oh my God, I got to tell you this before I forget. This is crazy. Uh-huh. So I knew about this place, but I'm only just now gone to in Cincinnati. There is a giant grocery store that's also an international grocery store, and it is called Jungle Jim's, and it is enormous, and it even has like animatronic figures, you know, like a Disney World, like Hall of Presidents, except for instance, over the selection of English food. They've got a big Robin Hood going, you know, hey, I'm Robin Hood, in a voiceover actor who is clearly not from England.
How's he go?
Well, I think he's talking like this, actually. I'm trying to do a bad, which is the only way I can do it. But I think he's saying, I am Robin Hood, here, you know, purveying these teas, you know, come get them from me. And then stuff like that. But anyway, here's the intriguing thing. The bathrooms. Mm-hmm. So I had to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. To the urinal.
Because I was like, well, if this store is taking a pee-pee, I'm going to take one. Because I feel like they're not being serious enough about food. So I go to the bathrooms, and they look like two porta-potties. I don't know what your word for that is. Call box loo or something. I don't know. But you know the one.
All right. Yeah. The ones you go inside.
They flush themselves. Not the ones here. The ones here are basically like plastic versions of Roman toilets.
They are like a TARDIS. Actually,
they are like a TARDIS, aren't they? So, but anyway, you know the ones. Yeah. The like plastic ones. They have them at fairs everything. Right. Here's the thing. Here's the TARDIS thing. You open them up and you walk in and it's a huge bathroom. It's just the entrance. It is made to look like you're walking into a porta potty. But when you go in, it's a large public restroom. So it's like a toilet TARDIS. I've never seen such a thing. And it confused, there was some people, because there's people shop there. So it's an international shopping. Yeah. And I saw this this lady get so confused. She thought it was a porta potty and she didn't want to go in. And then it opened up and she's like, it's bigger on the inside. And then they needed a bathroom attendant, like called the doctor. But.
Well, I kind of wonder what the, you know, because the TARDIS is based, it's a police box. And I wonder what the original ones had in them. I mean, there's not a lot of room in those things. I mean, they're still around. There's lots of them in Scotland.
I would imagine that they had a phone with no numbers on it.
Yeah.
And you just pick up the phone, and the phone automatically connects you to the police.
But they are the police.
I don't think there's anyone in there. I think it's a phone, and you pick up the phone, and the phone calls
the police. To call the police.
You say, you know, they go, can I help you? And you go, yeah, I got the police. Like, you don't have to dial the police. Because what's the police's number? Well, we know, like, here, they've got a number for emergency, but... If you just want to talk to, like, I just want to chat with a policeman. I don't know the number, but I guess if you had a,
I'm gonna ask Google what's in a blue police box. What is in a blue police? A blue inhaler. What is a blue police tent for? What is a blue police car? What is blue police tape?
Is this
police?
Is this a new project you're working on? Because I love it. I love it. Did you do this with Gregor? What is a blue? It's called your new book called What is a Blue? Contained...
You're right. The typical British police box contained a telephone linked directly to the local police station, allowing for patrolling officers. Oh, no, so the police would call the police to get in contact with the station reporting anything unusual, like a TARDIS.
Right. So if, like, you go in, it's like, so what would happen a lot of times... is people would think it was a real police box. They had an emergency. The doctor wouldn't be there. They'd go in, and they go, oh, a police emergency. And then, like, canine would have to fake it or something and go, oh, just, I'm a telephone, speaking to me, like that. You know, gosh, the my canine voice sounds like my Dalek voice, but without a ring... modulator.
You actually, when you did your posh voice before, you sounded like the chap who directed the Beatles Get Back documentary, which we just rewatched the 9 hours.
Oh, Mary Tyler Moore's boyfriend.
And his the posh
Hogg,
bloke, what's
something
his name?
Hogg. He was Mary Tyler Moore's boyfriend.
He's got a double-barreled name as well. And I'm thinking, how do the Beatles put up with him? Because he has terrible ideas. And he just manipulates them, and he records them, you know, without them knowing. And
look,
you know, he split the Beatles up, not Yoko Ono.
You know the power of the hyphen. The hyphen people come in, and they mess things up.
Yeah,
you know that. So, yeah, but he did that. I loved, like, so that fella whose name, I love how we don't remember his name, but there was also this myth. That his real father was Orson Welles. Did you know this?
Really?
So you see him smoking a cigar because he really wanted to believe that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I remember, like, I found out that the right around the time that I was conceived, my mother met Professor Irwin Corey, and I was really holding out. I was like, do I look like him? Do I look like him? But I don't. I look like my father. that's true. That's true. I wish they didn't hook up or anything. But you can see, somehow, his legacy endured.
Yeah, yes. And his almacy.
Vicky. So,
yeah.
Listen. Another thing that my experiences I felt in London, and we were talking about this earlier, is you go someplace that you've never been before, and you don't really think about it or digest it until you're away from it, because there's a lot of other things going on, like survival things. Like if you're walking down a busy street.
Yeah, not getting run over, not getting caught in the middle of a protest for a million people, that kind of thing.
For instance, I had this... I did. That's happened to me. That was very interesting. And so, like, for instance, I visited the Hawksmoor Church, St. Mary Woolnoth. And it's in a very busy area, right, on a weird little corner. And so, you know, getting there was kind of stressful. So I get to this small church, and then, you know, you're not sure if you can go in. You know how that is. You go, can you go in? Mm-hmm. I kind of go in, and there's, like, something going on. There's people on the altar. We're like, oh, no, no. But they're just rehearsing a play about John Newton, you know. So yeah, so they're up there, you know, doing the life of John Newton on the altar, just rehearsing it. And the father of one of the actors starts conversing with us because he's Irish and he can't help himself, and he talks the entire time. Mm-hmm. We're standing there, you know how it is. And so he's going on about John Newton was once in this church, and I was trying to look around, right? I'm trying to, because it's. Ian Nairn mentions it in his book, and I know it's a really interesting but small church, and so I'm trying to. But this guy is talking at me about John Newton. So there's no way I could even look at the church or think about it until I'm gone, and only then can I, like, look at a picture, and really focus and see and think about it and read about it. But the experience itself is like visiting something in a dream. It's so mixed up mm-hmm. with other stuff that I feel like I learn more about a place once I'm out of it.
Well, that's why I always need pictures after something happens, because otherwise I actually start to not believe that it was real sometimes.
Yes.
You know, an experience. I guess that's why we document things, because we don't really believe our own memories.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's some things I call log flume experiences, where, you know, they take a picture of you when you're coming on those rides and those affairs, you're sliding down a big water slide, yeah. And people go, "Rah!" And their faces. Maybe you're so, you're screaming, you're on a roller coaster kind of thing. When you experience something like that and the adrenaline's really going, your memory does different things than it might.
Yeah, the speed changes of your mind.
And you're having a different experience. And when you see a photograph of yourself, it's very strange and dissociative, mm. right? You just go, like, is that, I don't feel like that's me. So there's experiences like that, and I found, like, big city things were like that, because there was a couple London instances that were crowded, like near Buckingham Palace, and everything, it was a crush of people or something, all wanting to see, you know, why are there geese here, or not geese, what is big ass pelicans, where's the queen,
yeah, why are the pelicans eating the pigeons,
you know, why are they eating the queen? The queen was dead, so they had already cut her up and fed her to the cormorants, which are in abundance mm-hmm. there. Yeah, yeah. Beautiful.
It's
it is
a tradition.
You can see them just eating little pieces of her. It's beautiful. Yeah. The awful thing is that they didn't like her father, so there's just little bits of him still left. They're going to do that with Charles, too. They're not going to want... He'll just sit there like Jeremy Bentham. And so that was, you know, so you're on alert, and there was a walking over Waterloo Bridge. I took a video of it, in just absolute crush of people, like a Disneyland crush of humanity. And it was a little scary because there's so many people. And, you know, but you can't really, like, it's not like standing in the countryside and you go, it's just me and nature.
Well, I thought it's very important that you stayed by the river, because that the purpose of London kind of was because of that river, you know. And so what I love about being mm-hmm. in a river in a city is you actually still know what the point was.
Yes, and it just feels like where it's all happening to me. Like if you're going to include past, present, and future into one big tube of thing, and you feel that or sense that, then it's by the river where London is, like, happening for me. Also, it's my sense of bearings. Like, I feel safer. I could be being chased, but if I'm next to the Thames, I know where I am. Like, I know, is it on this side or this side of me? Like, there's landmarks.
Yeah. Forget your north, south, east, and west, but you definitely
know exactly. And there's enough large landmarks where you can get your bearings pretty quickly if you're right by the river.
They used to shut the South Bank in the olden days. They used to shut it away because that's where all the all the naughty people.
Oh, I love it. I love being on the naughty side. I want to, yeah, with all the lambs. Is that why Lambeth is some lambs going on down there? People, you know what's, you know where you should go? They have ask for the, get the lamb, order the lamb, and then they start calling it Lambeth. It's nice. Yeah, and the bridges were interesting to me. I never, when I was a kid, all that stuff was boring. If you and some of the bigger buildings are still boring, a little boring to me.
Well, I actually get bored in museums. I know it's really bad, but I basically get completely exhausted as soon as I walk in the door. I get drained of all energy when I go in the door of somewhere if it's got lots and lots of information.
Oh, same.
And then if you walk around with people who walk too slow, that's the worst.
Oh, the worst.
Torture
I hate
ever.
People who use, they'll go to museums. I don't hate anybody. They'll go to museums.
You should do.
If I'm with you, I don't care what you do, actually, at the museum. Do anything you want, except don't get married there. That I hate. I hate when there's like a wedding and you're like, we're going to leave. There's a wedding. So, I've been with somebody and they want to look at every painting or something. Like, look at this one, then go to
like
this
15
one.
Minutes, and then they've got to read all the stuff on the wall.
There's a couple different things I do. If it's a museum that I go to all the time, then I treat it like a family reunion, and I just have the a couple relatives I like, or I find out maybe they have something I didn't realize they had in their private collection, and I go look for it, and I visit it. But that's it. Like, there's stuff I don't even want my eyes to touch. Like, there's such garbage in a lot of museums. I was like, I don't want to waste time looking at some rich person's portrait that isn't by Sargent. So,
well, there's that whole thing that you're supposed to do this and you're supposed to do that and you're supposed to be interested in certain things. And, you know, I got to a point relatively recently, I thought, well, those are people aren't interested in most things I like.
Yeah, I do emotional dowsing. You know what a dowsing rod is? You know, they find water with that?
Yeah.
So I'll go, if I've never been to a museum, I'll walk into an individual gallery, and I'll just kind of like, I won't try to think anything. And I'll just look around, and I'll go, what is that? And I'll let something call me to it. And, and you say, well, you might miss something that's not obvious. I doubt that. Sometimes it's something that isn't super obvious. It's just, it's calling me. And, abstract paintings can do that if it's certain color or color combination or things like that. Do it. And then I let myself be drawn to that piece. And then I just let myself experience it. So I did, when I'm with people, there was somebody dissing Rothko online. what is this? Just a couple colors. And a lot of people were pointing out that it's a very experiential thing. Like, you know, there's a reason there's always a lot of people standing in front of his paintings, like just staring at it and having opinions. That's because it's evocative. It's doing something to people. And so when you're in the presence of it, you're like, I don't even know why this is doing this to me necessarily. Mm. And even if the feeling is like, what is this garbage? You're not moving on. You're still looking at it. So it's got you somehow. Mm-hmm. And you might not even be sure why that is ever. And you can do an experiment with people, and they'll gravitate towards them and look at them. And I let myself do that recently and thought, what is this? I just had this sense of not knowing, and I loved it. That point between.
Well, there's that, you get that thing, you can get a thing where you think you're supposed to think a certain thing, or you're supposed to know something, and then you think, I don't know that thing, and then you feel alienated from it. And then it's, well, what do you do after that point? Which, you know, happens with all kinds of experiences of things where we've not been given an adequate way into something, you know. Which is, I guess, why they put these stupid bits of paper on next to things that describe everything, which, fair enough, but it's like it detracts from your experience of something.
It does. It can. And sometimes they're weird things. They include weird details. I don't want to give away my live performance that I'm going to do in March because you know.
Yes, tell us about that.
I'm not really plugging it as much as that. It's fresh on my mind, so I'm thinking about a lot of stuff. But
you're allowed. It's WFMU.
Yeah, but I don't want to like give away the punchline of my thing. So just suffice it to say, I was looking at a lot of my favorite painters and eras and things like that. And it's just funny the things they choose to mention. Oh, this was strange too. There was a Harvey Dinerstein, who's a great Brooklyn painter, only died a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his paintings is hanging in this gallery that is nothing but like 19th century stuff and earlier. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether, I guess maybe people donated it, or I really don't know, but why it's hanging there. There's one modern piece next to all this. It's not modern looking, you know. It looks like a, you know, it's in a style that could be very old, but it was incongruous. And I wanted to ask why it was there, but I secretly don't want to know. And I noticed that I do that on the show, too. I'll say, oh, I can't remember the name of this thing. Don't tell me. Because there's this point between knowing and not knowing that's kind of lovely. And the Rothko painting did that to me visually, because the colors were oscillating, you know. It's like kind of like complementary colors almost, and they go, and so they recede, and you can't tell where you are in space. So they are disorienting in a really simplistic way. And I find that my life and even the most simple things, when I'm confused about them, have a wonderful element that seems to echo some principle of the universe. That's
because you're still connecting to the universe through yourself, because as soon as you put something into words, then you're removed from the experience and it becomes a secondary aspect of that thing. And it doesn't mean that you can't still connect to that experience, but as soon as you put something into words or explain it, basically you kill it in time, and it's dead, because you aren't then able to go any further in time traveling with the wonders around it, because it's saying this is the name of that, that's the blue police box, you know, unless it's a TARDIS, of course, that's different. But no, as soon as it's like the finger in the moon, it's like the finger is pointing at the moon, and the finger is that piece of paper on the wall, and the moon is the artwork, and the artwork doesn't need anything explained.
So the picture, yeah, I can see that. The picture becomes the memory. Like you take a picture of something, yes, and then you consult the picture.
And it's forever changing and therefore impossible to define, except for a time stamp when someone might say something. But the times, that's what's wrong with our world, is people try and kill things off by saying this is the definitive object and that's the end of that, and don't question it, and you can't do anything with it either.
And to try, it's when it comes to having experiences, it's good to trust your feelings too with experiencing art. And people get intimidated by, for instance, there is a Van Gogh at the Cincinnati Museum. It's a small portrait, and it's awful, because Van Gogh painted some really, people forget that there's some Van Gogh stuff out there that's wretched, in my opinion. But I don't think I'm the only one. I think anybody would look at it and go like, oh, gross, that doesn't work.
But he went through some periods where he wasn't very happy, and I don't think you can make good.
Yeah, he's just the dark colors. He's not doing the kind of small brushstrokey things. It's just, proportions are wrong on the faces, and they just look, some of the stuff's ugly. But, you know, people feel a little bit of pressure to find something, and they go both out. Like, you don't want it. Not everybody's a critic. There's that, you know, nobody asks you, my kid could do that. You know, shut up. But that person is also depriving themselves of an experience. They're just saying, I don't want to, I don't want to engage with this thing. I don't take it seriously. And whereas what they should be, thinking is that if you come to a restaurant and it has a certain type of food, eat that food. You know, don't scoff at it. And I think that's another thing. So it's either people feel intimidated, I'm going to be dumb if I don't get what this art is about, or that intimidation, that fear leads them to that other thing where they go, oh, I don't even, you know, this is below that anti-intellectual kind of animosity that you might have towards the eggheads making art.
Yeah, I mean, a good scholar will find, take you on the journey towards something, and a bad one will take you away from it.
Right, because you can find, I mean, maybe somebody finds joy in the old musty portraits that I don't like. I'm sure they do. I saw someone given a tour one time, and the docent was like, look at the, you know, you can see the lace. I was like, I don't know, that's not what I'm looking for. You know, you don't know what you're going to get out of a thing or what's even going to be. I put the art is on an equal level to people pushing me on a bridge. There's no difference. Everything that you engage with is a ready-made. Everything's theater to me. I don't make any distinction between a museum and a department store or a city block. And I make no distinction between watching a play or watching people at the mall or in a store. Mm. I don't see that there's no real difference.
Well, once again, art has been like, if you say to people, oh, do you like art or what's art? Or, you know, they're talking about like the stuff in museums and the stuff in galleries. And like, basically, that world, they don't think anything else exists unless they give it a name. And then it's outsider art if it's not on the inside. And it's like most art exists, you know, or craft or creativity exists without anyone else knowing about it. And, you know, most of the world is under the radar, and every now and then something, you know, gets to the point that it becomes a household name, and then it gets killed because it floats to the surface and gets defined.
Is there a difference, and I don't know that there is, between, and I've seen both in museums, between preserved human skin with a tattoo on it that's been cut off of a dead body and a church altar piece that's been taken out of a church and just put in a museum. They both feel the same to me, that they're out of context. This art wasn't meant for this. It's been ripped, like when they rip a Banksy off a wall and stick it in a museum. It's not where it's supposed to be. I mean, the worst that the where museums lost it for me is when they started putting preserved human remains that had been stripped of skin and had it replaced with some kind of clear plastic so that we could see flayed human corpses pretending to do the shot put. And that's when it all fell apart for me. Now we're just stacking corpses in these buildings and looking at them. Man, well, contemplates himself.
Museums are full of dead things.
Yeah, because it is that.
And urinals.
It's like a Renaissance etching or something of a skeleton that's looking at a skull, and it's called Man Contemplates Himself, you know? And it is that, I guess it's we confront our mortality there. But I like to go, like when you go, and what you confront is not your mortality, but the infinite. And you start to feel that sense of timelessness or being outside of time. And
your connection, rather than being disconnected from something, as being separate to you, like you put it in a frame or on a wall or something, and then you're meant to be on the outside and finding a kind of tenuous connection. But whereas, you know, you kind of want to experience and go inside it and be in it. That's why films are so amazing when they're good. It's like, because you actually, it breaks the not third wall.
Yeah. Have you had the, I'm sure you have, everybody has, the experience where a film or a TV show influences your dreams the night? If you watch it, you know, they like a new kind of, like you dream in a genre or something.
That's why I stopped watching soap operas when I was younger, because I used to dream about people in soap operas.
Yeah, they work their way into your consciousness, and I think...
Yeah, it was never like the high-end stuff.
No. No, I find myself in the... And you think, well, how am I... You know, if I'm having a dream where I'm in some sort of, like, war situation, and I've actually never been in a war... then there's absolutely no doubt how this got into my head. Like, came in through someone else's pictures and sounds.
Yeah, you have to be really careful what you watch. I mean, I actually start having the nightmare while I'm watching movies a lot of the time, because, you know, if they're really negative or violent or loads of swearing and stuff, I just can't watch it because I'm too sensitive.
That's happened to me at times. Like, I remember I was going through this period where I felt very spiritual, and I was doing a lot of meditating, and I was really, I don't know, I did feel like sensitive. I'd cut out all kinds of, kind of purifying, you know, and so you're eating really well and being really healthy and meditating. And I tried to watch, what was it? Oh, so I tried to watch Iron Man, and it felt like an assault on my soul. It felt like I couldn't want. It was horrifying, and it was just because it wasn't anything like objective. It had to do with just paying attention to the point that most movies or art draw you in. Because they do, or it wouldn't work, right? You have to care a bit, or the suspense wouldn't work, or the humor wouldn't work. So you have to be a little bit invested in the thing you're watching.
Well, my favorite movies are the ones where people don't get killed, because that means the people that have written it have really had to use their imagination rather than it just being about everyone killing each other. Like Loki, the Marvel series Loki. People don't get killed in there. I mean, they do get crushed into the tiniest little box at one point, the little glass cube, and it gets smaller and smaller, and you don't actually see them get crushed, so you don't know. But no one gets they do get what's it called, where they get disappeared.
Yeah, I just watched the next
what's
season.
What's it called?
They get trimmed or cut or
something.
What do you call it? They trim, they cut their, pruned.
It's like trimmed.
Pruned,
which is a brilliant, brilliant word. But when they get pruned, they only get disappeared to another timeline. And that's fantastic. Like, imagine if in other movies, like, you know, Iron Man or something, if anything bad happened, they had to be pruned to another dimension and you have to explain where they went. Or a bit like, you know, if in a movie, like, everyone started getting killed in a war, you'd have to see where they all went after
they
died.
There's a long, I don't know if it's long, but there's a literary tradition of having to unkill characters, as you know. Because I guess Sherlock Holmes was one of the first, like, you know, it's like, you can't unkill this, please.
They did that in Magnum as well. We've been watching Magnum, and there's a bloke that died, and then he came back as about literally 2 weeks later as a lookalike, and now he's the same bloke.
Yeah, right. Because people make a stink or something. It's like, oh no, you got to bring them back. And Doctor Who, even, you know, I don't know if people are making a stink, but they're like, well, you can't end the show. And it's like, well, you know, that we got an elderly alcoholic as the actor. Yeah. So it's like, well.
Yeah, Neil Tennant wants to come back. We're going to just have to give him another TARDIS of his own.
So they did make it. You know, when his hand got cut off, they made us.
Is it Neil Tennant or David Tennant? One of them's in the Pet Shop Boys.
I wish they were
David
both
Tennant,
in it.
David
Neil Tennant, when he got his hand cut off. Not the Doctor Who David Tennant.
That's David Tennant. Neil Tennant's
right,
in the Pet
when
Shop
the guy
Boys.
In the Pet Shop Boys got his hand cut off, they did make a second one out of the hand.
Yeah.
Didn't they?
Right.
So there's been a lot of him. He's very ubiquitous.
I haven't seen a lot of Doctor Who, but I got really into it this time around, because basically they got some financing from Disney, who make the Marvel stuff, and I really have loved watching Loki. It kind of blew my mind, all to do with sacred timelines. And I thought, oh, they're going to start, as well as being a bit clunky, you know, clunky Doctor Who, they're going to have some really amazing effect, cosmic Doctor Who as well. And that's what I like about Twin Peaks, which we were bound to talk about, which we are now. Well, it's David Lynch. He gets all the, this that amazing art house to do those amazing effects, you know, of the cosmos and all that. But then he'll get this the most cringiest effect from Adobe After Effects, which is basically a swirl.
Right, right.
he'll put in the sky a swirl, and it's like, what, did they all go home? That's you, David, doing that bit, isn't it?
You know, I feel like the more there's been a little time since the return, right? And I do feel like everything preceding the last two episodes is definitely not happening. That there's the tells are that, you know, that the reality is incomplete in the way remembered reality. So I'm not saying it's a dream, but it's how you misremember things, or how.
Yeah, we're way more flawed than
right. So when the thing you're watching has stuff that you're like, well, that's not quite right, or that doesn't seem real. Like there's little tells in your dreams. So the well, you're not lucid dreaming, but you're like, well wait a minute, like, you know, could my grandmother
time to flap
could
your
my
arms
grandmother swimming. Always fly? I guess so. I have I guess she's not dead. Those I have those moments like, oh my God, there's my grandmother in bed.
I guess she's not dead. Someone who had died, and then I dreamt about him, and I said, you're not dead, and he goes, yep.
Right, because you know, the person. The person's no more dead when they're dead than they were alive when they're alive to you. Because all you can do is perceive that other individual anyway. So you never know what's in their head or them or what they're doing when they're not around. So all you really do have is this perception of them, and then most of what you have of all people are memories. And so, you know.
Actually, all you really have is right now.
Right. So, you know, people are no more dead than they are alive. Even the dead ones. Because I know there's living people that are in a state now of limbo with me because I've met them and we will never meet again. And, you know, I mean, I don't know who they are exactly, but I know there's people now that we know each other and I will never see them again. Some of them I will never interact with again. Like maybe people I met in England. You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the people you haven't met yet?
Yeah, they're virtually dead. No, really, when you think about it, I
and
can't
before
mourn
you
them,
were
but...
born, before you were born, you were dead.
Yeah, I remember that. And then before that, I was a milkmaid in 17th century London. I remember.
You should have paused after
I remember
for a really long time.
I had this past life where I remember kicking over a lantern. And it must have been middle of the 17th century London, 1666 or something.
Six.
I'm so convinced that Christopher Wren did that. Because like then he gets his contract for like, we need you to build 70 churches. All right. Oh,
awesome.
Very good. Just like, you know, maybe post-World War II, you know, this architect shows up or something. Yes, I did not bomb them. This ex-Luftwaffe suddenly is an architect. We need you to rebuild some things.
Well, that's Doctor Who, really, isn't
yeah,
it?
Right? Yeah, right? Yeah. You cause it and then you go fix it. That can lead to, just thinking that can lead to trouble. Because I remember during the Atlanta Olympics bombing, they for a while they were convinced that the guy who reported it did it, which is weird because it's like, well, why did he report it if he didn't do it? Like, I don't know what kind of logic that is. He clearly did not do it, and then you know they eventually found the guy who did it. But I always thought that was strange. You know, that's your evidence is like he who smelt it dealt it. That's not that maybe that comes from fiction or something, but.
Yeah.
But I guess some people do it to self-aggrandize or whatever, you know. I have now caught the thief, but I was the thief.
So what did you, when you came to London, what was the thing that you wanted to go to that you didn't get to go to?
I wanted to go in the, I know there's parts of the Thames that at low tide you can go mudding and go and pick up coins and
shit
like that.
For the trolleys.
I really wanted
trolleys,
to do that, get a shopping trolley. I don't know how you bring it back. there's like a du chevaux in there. I want that. I'll just ship it back to the States and drive it.
Yeah.
Clay pipe. I would use it. I would have it cleaned there. Let's see. Is there anything? Oh, it's like when, so Travis asked me when I was, he said, what, after a full.
I think you need to tell people who you're talking about.
No, we don't. Why? What's the point? Okay. Some guy asked me. It could be anybody. I just said Travis because you know who he is. But he asked me when I was in London. Somebody was there at the cafe, Oto. He's a writer.
He's a writer.
And he said, well, what did you.
He wrote a book
So he says, what did you do? What did you see today? Because I said it was interested in architecture. And I said, I don't know. I don't know. Because I don't know where I was all the time.
That's normal.
Like, I kind of, and I know it's kind of a cheeky answer, but I don't, like, I hadn't really looked it up yet. I don't know where I was. I'm going to go back and check.
Yeah, but also when people go, what have you done today? It's like, oh. You know, it's a bit like, how are you?
And he asked me specifically what I saw, right? So I was like, man, I saw all sorts of things. Some, like, I don't make it, like, there's sometimes I don't make a distinction between, you know, whether something has a piece of architecture with a full, you know, glazed curtain wall or someone's nice bottom or something, which I noticed standing next to it. So those are all there together. I have to go home and sort them out. And
I only remember things if I write about them or something, or I can't just recall stuff. It's a bit like watching a movie. It's like I can watch a movie, not remember the name of the movie as I'm watching it, and then afterwards I'll forget I've watched it, and then I could watch it again and have a brand new experience of it.
Yes,
same thing,
absolutely.
Just like in London, is although I've lived in London for many years, there's some streets, if you turn me around 180 degrees, I don't know where I am.
Oh, I can imagine that. There was some place I'd been, blocks that I'd been to a couple of times, and I'd go there again, and I'd go, wait a minute. It takes me a minute to orient myself. Especially if there's been, I noticed this when I was just touring Cincinnati, is that if I could remove a few buildings, I would be great. But there's some view blockers that where you stay disoriented because you can't get your bearings.
We actually never got to take you to a really great view, which is at Richmond Park, which is like on a hill. You came to Richmond, but it was dark. But in Richmond Park, it's really high up, and there's this telescope, that's to the sky. What's it called when... Is it a telescope? Do telescopes only look upwards, or can you look across? Is that still a telescope?
You can look at... Yeah, well, that's what they used on ships when they'd go, like, oh, there's a whale...
It's called a telescope,
isn't
it? Yeah. Anyway, so they've got a telescope, but there's a kind of restricted, a sacred view between Richmond and I guess 10 miles away is St. Paul's Cathedral. And you go up on this hill and you look through all this little thing and you see a tiny little St. Paul's.
Oh, wow. How is that possible?
Yeah. 10 miles.
No, I don't see how that's possible.
View.
Wow!
It's again. You're not allowed to block that view. It's a protected view.
Right.
Called,
yeah. How is that? I'd think you'd be downhill from it because the river doesn't. The river go east to west. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, but 10 miles away on a hill, you could see anything you want in London if there wasn't something in the way. And so it's called a protected view. Is what it's called. And it's amazing. We take Americans up there because Americans are easily impressed by.
We're easily impressed? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
I just like the old things.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You just, if you like something older than about 1950, you're really impressed.
It was so great talking to you, Vicky. I can't believe we burned through an entire hour. We did.
Oh,
I know, but the whole point of the whole point that we were trying to get to is that this is Miracle Nutrition with Hari White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, or online at WFMU.org worldwide, freeform radio, something, 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 something. Oh, Vicky, thank you so much. My guest has been...
By the way, I'm on WFMU yesterday.
Oh, yeah, you were so good yesterday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll talk to you real soon, right after I press the stop button, probably.
Twins' name is Ebony. My name was Mahogany. Twins' name is Ebony.